Welcome to Winkworth Arboretum, the National Trust's finest arboretum, set within the rolling hills and valleys of the Surrey landscape. My name is Simon Toomer, and I'll be accompanying you as you explore some of what this magical place has to offer. I've spent my working life amongst trees, so I'm hoping I'll be able to help you get your eye in to appreciate the variety within this landscape, to look up into the canopy, identify different trees, and to use all your senses to get the most out of your visit. This guide is easy to use. As you journey around the arboretum, look out for the signposts with the headphone signs on them. Pause the podcast between each sign to make sure you can see the wonderful trees you're hearing about. Winkworth Arboretum is home to around 6,000 trees with about 1,000 different species. From the start, its creator, Dr. Wilfred Fox, was just as interested in the arrangement of his trees from a visual point of view as in their botanical credentials. You can see this in the beautiful and ever-changing treescapes he left us. You'll also be hearing from Graham Alderton. He's the head gardener here at Winkworth, and has some handy tips for learning to recognise the many trees that you'll find along the way. Because it's the trees that are the real stars of the show here, no matter what time of year you're visiting. Take a look at this multi-stemmed sweet chestnut. Its scientific name is Castanea sativa, and it belongs to the same family as beeches and oaks. Sweet chestnut can reach 35 metres when mature and live for up to 700 years. It's a deciduous tree, meaning it sheds its leaves annually. And it has some quite distinctive features, as head gardener Graham Alderton explains.
The trees themselves do have a slight flare or bowl at the base of the tree. In their juvenile years, they've got a fairly smooth bark. But one of the things to look out for once a tree has begun to grow is the fact that the bark has got these lovely ridges on them, and they're called fissures. Now, on this one, you can actually see them, but on some very, very old ones, they're very prominent, and it's probably the only tree that does that. So once you get your eye in on that, you'll recognise them in other places.
There are lots of ways of identifying trees, one of which is by looking at the leaves. This isn't always possible, of course, depending on the time of year, but the leaves on the sweet chestnut have particular features to look out for if you're visiting between spring and autumn.
The leaves are oblong, normally up to about 8 inches long. They're usually rounded or heart-shaped at the base. They are toothed and glossy, dark green in colour.
The term toothed simply means that the leaf has small points along it that look similar to a saw or serrated knife's edge. Winkworth is home to native and non-native trees, but what's the difference? Well, if we ignore the English Channel for a moment, the United Kingdom is nothing more than a peninsula of Europe that was separated from the mainland about 8,000 years ago. Our flora is essentially a shared subset of that of Western Europe. The definition of a native species here is one that occurred since the ice receded after the Ice Age. The sweet chestnut is thought to have been introduced by the Romans for its nuts and timber, but it now behaves like a native tree. Working out the age of a tree depends on numerous factors. However, this particular tree is even more difficult to age because it's likely to have been part of a coppice. If you look just over the other side of the track, you'll see a coppice with short stumps called stools with young shoots.
Coppicing is an ancient way of managing woodlands. The trees are cut down to a stool. The trees then regenerate and then they're cut down again at a certain age, depending on the tree and what we want the timber for. In fact, the ones behind us used to be used as walking sticks, but essentially they're then separated into areas and you allow them to grow over a period somewhere between sort of 7 and 15 years.
In areas of coppice, there is a greater biodiversity, allowing for a large number of insects and other creatures to find somewhere to live. So it's a really useful tool for a number of reasons. See if you can spot more areas of coppice and resultant multi-stem trees as you walk around the site. For all its natural appearance, Much of what you see at Winkworth today, including most of the trees, is the result of Dr. Wilfred Fox's vision. This memorial is dedicated to him. Dr. Fox, who bought the land in 1937, was attracted to what he described as the remarkable beauty of the valley. A valley quite unspoiled, he wrote, of pastoral and wooded character, patterned with hedgerows and abounding with wild flowers. Thousands of trees and shrubs were planted by Dr. Fox, who enlisted family to help, as well as calling on the expertise of friends, the curator of Kew Gardens among them. But what exactly is an arboretum?
It's an area devoted to specimen trees, which are grown for research, education and ornamental purposes. They can be part of a botanic garden, such as Kew Gardens have a large arboretum, but they can also be standalone areas. Now, Winkworth is more of a landscape arboretum, whilst we do have some very nice specimens, but really it's all about what Fox saw. It's about his inclination to paint the landscape with trees and the colour, and it's something that we obviously bear in mind whilst we're looking at the trees, the planting and the succession as time goes on.
The first thing Fox thought about was the colouring in autumn. So he introduced scarlet oaks, red oaks and maples. But as time moved on, he brought in other species to add some other fantastic colours, like the blue cedars that you'll see from the meadow later. He started to extend the seasonal colour with a winter garden that's behind us, and also a summer garden, which is where you are standing now.
The two small trees, which are either side of the memorial, those are actually sorbus trees, which Fox was very interested in and very knowledgeable. And those trees are actually named after them, so those are Sorbus Wilfred Fox.
Sorbus Wilfred Fox is a hybrid of the common white beam, Sorbus aria, and the Himalayan white beam, Sorbus vestita. They are normally between 3 to 8 metres high, with white flowers in spring and silver foliage. They're fast-growing and attract a lot of wildlife to feed and nest. Some non-native trees continue to thrive in new environments, like this Stuartia pseudocamellia, a member of the tea family. This species is native to Japan and Korea and commonly referred to as Korean or Japanese Stuartia. This is a deciduous garden tree that can often be found in wooded habitats.
So aesthetically, these are one of the best trees that we've got in the arboretum. As you can see, they have this multicoloured bark, bronze in some places, brown in others, and then a lighter brown. But when the sun hits it at certain times of the day, it just lights up. And then in the spring, when the leaves come out, they come out in these incredible fiery green bunches of leaves that just look absolutely amazing, and they almost look like small clouds just floating in the air. But it's a small tree, and certainly one for all seasons.
The Stuartia exhibits lovely camellia-like flowers in summer. They are white with 5 petals and golden yellow centres. As you sit on the owl bench looking across Thorncombe Valley, you can see through the trees to the meadow below. It was from that meadow that Dr. Fox looked up towards where you are now and was inspired to plant oaks along this bank. An oak will support more life than any other tree species in the UK, around 280 different forms of life, and it continues to sustain life long after it's dead. There are 22 different species of oak at Winkworth, and the main showstoppers here are the American oaks, which are the large ones to the left and right in front of you. Red oak, Quercus rubra, and scarlet oak, Quercus coccinea. These were planted to provide a real feast of autumn colour. Mixed in with them are other species of oak, in particular the native English oak, Quercus roba, as Graham describes.
Right behind the owl bench here, there's actually a number of oaks that you can see. Normally an oak will have a good straight trunk, but being right on the edge of the bank here, sometimes they can grow a little bit differently. They can sometimes be a little bit shorter because of the winds that are coming over them. The leaves we refer to as lobed. The bark is green, but it can also be a pale grey and sometimes slightly pink. It's fissured, but not as deeply fissured as the chestnut. You can sometimes see on the northern side of trees, especially in woodland, you'll get some green growth. Now, that's algae, and that prefers the darker, colder side of the tree. In case you ever get lost, there's a good chance if a tree is green on one side and not on the other, that the green side is in fact facing north.
Lobed means that the leaf has deeply indented margins with smooth rather than toothed edges. On the English oak, leaf burst occurs during mid-May and the leaves have almost no stem and grow in bunches. They can be identified in winter by rounded buds in clusters at the end of stems. In folklore, oak trees are seen as strong and protectors of the virtuous. King Charles II took refuge in the branches of a great oak, and following his restoration on May the 29th, 1660, that day was celebrated as Royal Oak Day, when loyal subjects wore oak apples, twigs and leaves. Many of Winkworth's trees are outstanding examples of their particular species. Some are even champions. These are the tallest or broadest of their kind in the county of Surrey, or even in the whole country. They're identified with a blue plaque. Here stands one of those champions, a southern beech tree that goes by the botanical name Notophagus. Graham tells us more.
This tree is Notophagus dombii. It's an absolutely magnificent specimen. It is a Surrey champion. These grow on the southern coast of what they refer to as Patagonia, so it's Argentina. The interesting thing with this is that it is such a solid, large trunk, and then as your eyes go back up, you can see it's an evergreen tree. And in fact, the leaves are so small that they almost seem out of proportion for the size of the tree. As you draw from the base, where you can see that it's a nice lobe shape at the bottom, and then as you come up through the trunk, you can see it gets more and more sort of light pink colours, and then where the bark has grown over the top, it's slightly grey, small patched areas of grey going all the way up, and then you can see also some of the knots where previously branches have been up there as well.
Although it's a broadleaf tree, which means it has leaves and not needles, this tree is an evergreen. The first branch is often more than 50 feet above the ground, which means that the tree can be harvested for large amounts of clear lumber, a collective term for harvested wood. The timber is considered to be very precious, and some of the best stands are protected within the bounds of state parks in Argentina. A stand is another useful term. It simply means a community of trees occupying a specific area and significantly uniform in species composition, size, age, and arrangement. As you walk past the southern beach, the path you're on now is referred to as Cherry Avenue. Winkworth still holds on to the original name, in spite of the clusters of birch trees you'll see over to your left that have begun to take over. Winkworth has a variety of species of birches from all over the world, one of which is the silver birch, Betula pendula, which is native to Europe and parts of Asia. When young, the bark on a silver birch is a beautiful white colour. Then, as the tree ages, the bark darkens, splits and peels. Most tend to become covered in moss, and in some countries people even wash the bark of their silver birches to bring the colour back to life. Birch trees are very important culturally and spiritually to many people in the Northern Hemisphere. In Slavic cultures, planting birch trees around your home was thought to protect it from harm. There are still some cherry trees growing here, though. A cherry tree's bark is commonly brown, grey, or a shade in between. The bark of a cherry tree has what is called horizontal lenticels. These are marks in the bark that look like small cuts that are darker or lighter than the rest of the bark. These allow passage of air and other gases between the atmosphere and internal tissues. You can also touch the bark of the cherry trees and feel that they are not shaggy but very hard, making it useful as building material. Among the ancient trees at Winkworth, you'll find newer stories, such as this Wollemi pine, which was first discovered in 1994. David Noble, an officer with the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service in Australia, was in a deep, narrow canyon in the rugged Wollemi National Park when he noticed something unfamiliar about the bark of the trees. He took specimens back for further investigation and, in tribute to David, these newly identified trees are now known as Wollemia nobilis, or Wollemi pine. However, the other rangers who were present were not too happy about this naming, so the official line is that it is a tree of noble stature.
So this one's got a nice long straight stem. It's got lovely long pointed glossy green leaves either side of the branches. And this particular specimen, despite the tree being known as quite a slow grower, has in fact doubled in size in about 5 years, so it's enjoying its place there.
After the discovery, young Wollemi pines were sent all over the world with the intention that they could then be grown in different places to help ensure the tree's survival.
So this is essentially what they refer to as ex-situ conservation, which means really off-site conservation. Just in case something happens to the natural stand of them, of which there are not that many. In fact, during the wildfires of a few years ago, we all got a message asking us about our trees to make sure that they're still healthy, how large they are and how many there are.
This is an example of how Winkworth can be involved in the important issue of conservation. Here at Azalea Steps, you can see another instance of Dr. Fox's vision. These steps are named for the low-lying flowering shrubs that have been planted here. Azaleas are members of the rhododendron group of plants. These flowers have numerous associations in different cultures. Sometimes they're a symbol of wealth and elegance. In China and Japan, they represent homesickness. They're also known for their toxicity, and to send a bouquet of azaleas in a black vase was once considered a death threat. The source of Dr. Fox's inspiration here was a visit to a botanical garden, Villa Carlotta, on Lake Como in northern Italy. There he saw azaleas growing on a green slope. And it's here at the steps that you really get a sense of how the different kinds of planting work together in Fox's design.
If you look back up to Azalea Steps, you see these lovely shades and colours of the azaleas. They've been cut into the hillside there. They're all, in fact, different species. Some have grown together to form one large mound. And then above them, there's a layer of Japanese aces that sort of languish and fall over the top of them. And then if you look to the right, you can see the magnolia tree over there, which gives us a fantastic pink flower later in the season. And if you're never sure from a distance whether it's a magnolia, see that the branches come out and then they've got these very erect vertical branches that go straight up toward the sky. That's normally a good sign that it's a magnolia.
The Japanese aces that Graham points out here have a twisted architectural trunk with bark that in most cases is smooth and grey. When they first come out in spring, the leaves are a really vibrant lime green colour that looks like frog's legs or baby's hands. These turn red or crimson in the autumn, but when the first frost hits, the leaves shrivel almost immediately. They grow all over the site here, so keep an eye out for more as you walk around. Facing up the steps past the mound of azaleas on the left, there are some elegant medium-sized trees called katsura. Their leaves are kidney-shaped and turn yellow, orange and pink in autumn. When their leaves drop, they can also be identified for another more unusual reason.
Those are the trees that give us the fantastic smell of sugar. When the leaves drop to the ground, they slowly process and they emanate a smell of burnt sugar, which we've got dotted all over the arboretum, and in fact is one of our visitors' favourite things during that period.
Traditionally, in Japanese culture, it was thought that a giant katsura tree grew on the moon and the shade from its leaves produced the shadows across the moon's surface. The story goes that it was tended by an eternal gardener who pruned the tree each night until a full moon appears. But the tree grows back quickly and the shadows return, and so his work is never complete. Here is one of the few deciduous conifers at Winkworth, a dawn redwood. This Chinese tree is the last surviving member of an ancient group of trees called Metasequoia.
This particular one is Metasequoia glyptostroboides. And again, similar to the Wollemi pine, this one was thought extinct until about the 1940s China, when in fact they found the tree again. And again, it was sent all over the world at the time. And we've got this beautiful specimen sat here. I've got to say, it's one of my favourite trees.
You'll notice that it's thick at the base. Then as you gaze up, the branches become thinner as they ascend, making a distinctive pyramidal or triangular shape.
The tree itself is quite distinguishable, and you can pick it out from a number of other trees.
This is Winkworth's only monkey puzzle tree. It grows in the forests of Chile and Argentina.
From a distance, it looks as if you want to touch it, but close up, the leaves, they're incredibly sharp. No one knows entirely how it got its name, but one of the stories is that apparently monkeys used to be able to climb up it, and then they got stuck and they wouldn't be able to climb back down again because the leaves were too sharp for them.
What's interesting about its history in this country is that the monkey puzzle once actually grew in the region that we now know as Yorkshire. We know this from fossilised remains dating back 175 million years. The fossilised wood of this tree is still mined today to produce a type of gemstone, which is called Whitby Jet. You're now entering a very special part of Winkworth. This oak-dominated ancient woodland at the northern end of the Arboretum has remained largely unplanted with non-native trees. Ancient woodland is defined as an area that we know has been wooded since at least the year 1600. Prior to that date, areas were rarely planted, so we can be sure that for a very long time this has been woodland. If you look up, you'll be able to see that the oaks provide a wonderful high canopy. In spring, before the mature oaks come into leaf, bluebells flourish beneath the bare branches, and in late April to early May, a carpet of bluebells can be seen growing across the woodland floor. It's estimated that an amazing half of the world's population of bluebells can be found in the UK. Our native species, Hyacinthoides nonscripta, can be identified by its dark shade, cream-coloured pollen and subtle sweet scent. A bluebell wood, as you'll find here, is one of Britain's most vulnerable habitats and home to hundreds of threatened species, including butterflies, flowering plants, and invertebrates. Characteristic birds like nuthatches, tree creepers, and great spotted woodpeckers are frequently seen and heard here. Generally, non-native trees or shrubs aren't planted in ancient woodland, but fox, not thinking in the same way as we do now with regard to biodiversity and native habitat, did introduce some non-native trees with some interesting results.
He had the idea of planting some Japanese acers as a lower or mid-story, which when I arrived here a few years ago, I was rather amazed to see, and I wasn't that keen on. But since then, I've referred to his planting here of Japanese acers as his glorious mistake. The leaves are generally a brilliant red and also an orange. And then they drop their leaves at different times onto the ground. And they remain there. And if the wind doesn't push them too far away, you just get this fantastic, brilliant red carpet, obviously on the ground, but then you've also got some more that then have the canopy still intact, so you've just got this fabulous red colour that just goes all the way through the woodland.
Take a few moments to appreciate the oaks here. Remember the slightly fissured bark that is green, pale grey and sometimes slightly pink, the lobed, smooth-edged leaves and thick, straight trunk. Until 2003, Winkworth was known for its two lakes. When it was discovered that major work was needed on the dams that helped maintain them, it was decided to discontinue the dam for Phillimore Lake. This meant the area could be drained and become a marshy wetland. The whole area, including the small stream that runs through it, provides a variety of habitats. The dam for Rose Flash Lake, was strengthened, and the lake's open water and shady margins provide homes and feeding grounds for a variety of birds. These include kingfishers, herons, cormorants, little grebes, and a variety of ducks, geese, and other wildfowl. The enormous leaves of Chilean rhubarb, Gunnera manicata, give the area below the causeway a striking appearance. Elsewhere, native plants including yellow flag iris and common reed dominate. Around the margins, alder and willow trees encroach from the surrounding woodland. Here in the wild flower meadow is where you can really appreciate Dr. Fox's grand vision. This view of Winkworth was the most familiar to him, as he'd walk from his home, a farmhouse just across from this meadow, to the Arboretum. Unlike some of the more enclosed spaces, this meadow landscape provides habitat for grassland plants like bird's foot trefoil, meadow vetchling, and black knapweed. As you stand and face toward the lake, looking across the water to the left is an area that's referred to as the bowl, and you can see the undulating shape there as it drops down, then rises back up. On the lakeside slopes of the bowl, the combinations of trees make this Winkworth's most colourful view in the autumn. Fox was inspired by, and knew a lot about, the colour change at that time of year, so he planted an abundance of trees on the hillside. And he was also aware of the effect of the reflection in the lake. Follow Graham as he guides your eye across the panorama, picking out some of the most notable trees.
If we start over on the left, lower down, we have a pocket of Japanese aces, which again turn a fiery red. And then above them and all the way along the back is the scarlet oaks and the red oaks and also the liquid ambers. Another North American tree that turns a lovely red-pink colour. And then above them, on the ridge of the bank, are some Acer rubrums, which are the red acers, and we know those are some of the original plantings. As we move toward the centre of the picture here, we can see a row of grey-coloured trees. Those are the grey cedars. And then just in front of those, there's a row of birches that you can see. And then again, back towards the bowl on the left-hand side, there are some tupelo trees. Those are Nyssa sylvaticas, and they turn a fantastic yellow colour in the autumn. The trees that you can see right in the centre there, the taller ones behind the birches, those are one of our native trees, Larix decidua, and again, that's the deciduous conifer. And then you can see pockets of different colours, and then rising back up over to the other side up there, then we have some pines all the way around the back there, which then finish off the colour.
And finally, over to the left-hand side, right in the centre of the bowl where it's flat, right on the edge of the lake, you can see one of the larger trees, one of Winkworth's English oaks. You can see the growth pattern, the long, straight stem, and the lovely shape of the branches reaching out in all directions. The wise old English oak. It's considered to have a special place in British culture, history, and hearts. Its acorns can represent rebirth, the cycle of life, and like this arboretum, humble beginnings. The trees and shrubs here at Winkworth are the living legacy of Dr. Wilfred Fox and his contribution to arboriculture. Their conservation and replanting is an essential part of Winkworth's spirit.